All right,
Hello,
Krishna.
Krishna.
And
This
once
is
again,
Nithya Kishori Devidasi from San Antonio, Texas.
Hare Krishna.
Nithya Kishori Mataji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much for joining the call, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you once again, everybody, for participating in today's seminar. Now, without further ado, I would like to call to Kalika Mataji, who can share a brief introduction of our today's speaker, Her Grace Arudha Mataji. So, Palika Mataji, over to you.
Thank you, Preeti Mataji. Hare Krishna to all the devotees. Just want to steal a few moments from all of you at the Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call and all our YouTube viewers to give a brief introduction on our today's speaker, Her Grace Arudha Mataji. Arudha Mataji and her husband, Anantarupa Prabhuji, are both disciples of His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. They began practicing Krishna consciousness in Chicago in the early 1980s and initiated the construction of the ISKCON Temple in Boyle, U.S. What started off in 1986 as a small weekly program in their home has turned into a beautiful mid-sized Vedic temple for their lordship of Sri Sri Radha Banke Bihari. Padma Purana states, Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu. We should always remember Vishnu and never forget the Lord. This is the perfection of life. Arudha and Anantarupa, Arudha Mataji and Anantarupa Prabhuji have lived their life bringing this word to reality as they effectively homeschool the kids while successfully running the Govinda's restaurant in Boyle for 6 long years. No wonder their elder son, Radhika Ramandas, holds a PhD degree in Hinduism, has authored India's heritage column for Back to Godhead for several years. His mission in self-realization has taken him to release his first book, the Chaitanya Vaishnava Vedanta of Jiva Goswami. His younger brother is also following the footsteps of his elder brother and pursuing PhD in science and religion from Oxford University. Arudha Mataji is a success story in Krishna conscious parenting, and she generously shares her experiences in worldwide seminars of how to homeschool kids with Prabhupada's books and how to sharpen their soft skills so that they can achieve perfection in life. Once again, warm welcome to Arudha Mataji for conference call. Hare Krishna, Arudha Mataji, Dandat Pranam. All good.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Can you see me and can you hear me?
Yes, Mataji.
Yes, Mataji. Okay, good. Okay, I'm so happy to be here today. And this is the first one of the two-part series on the art of Krishna conscious parenting that I will be presenting to you. I have three parts to my seminar, and I will cover one part of that today. And the first part is setting up the home environment in a way that becomes conducive to our children's Krishna consciousness. You know, because the idea behind the seminar is how to raise our children in a Krishna conscious way and what are some of the tools we can use to help with that. So the first part of the series is going to be talking about setting up a home, how to set up a home and what are some of the things we should do and some of the things that we should not do. So after I cover there will be like four or five slides to cover this section, and after each slide we can open it for questions. And I would like this seminar to be interactive because it's a lot more fun, and I'd like to hear from you also. So so I'll open it up for questions for just like five minutes or 10 minutes for every slide, and this way everyone gets to ask questions, and then I'll move on. And And this way I will cover the first section today. And then tomorrow I will cover the second section, which is the teaching Srimad Bhagavatam to us, to our children, and the benefits of doing that. So basically it covers the academic side, their academic and the spiritual nurturing side. And tomorrow I should be also able to cover the third section, and which is extracurricular activities for our children, and which is not a very long one. So Prabhupada there was actually a motto that ISKCON generally follows, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, which is purity is the source, books are the basis, preaching is the essence, and utility is the principle. So today we will cover purity is the source, which covers basically how to cultivate this purity within and without. Okay? Any questions so far? Okay, so now I have a slide presentation that I will follow that, making it easier for everybody to follow. I don't know where the slide is. Oh, there we go. Okay, so this is a very nice quote by Srila Prabhupada, which says that, I'm going to read it out to you. It's a very nice one. If we train children by developing and encouraging their propensity to love Krishna, then we shall be successful in educating them to the topmost standard. Then they shall happily agree to do whatever you ask them. So really, Maggie, this is... Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
But the slides are not moving.
Oh, they didn't. It moved on my screen. Really? Oh. So you cannot see the next one, huh?
No, Mataji.
Really?
Mataji says, it says screen sharing is passed.
Oh, stop. It says screen sharing is off, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's... For me, it shows that it's on.
Hare Krishna Mataji, I think you have to just button again the play button.
Can you see it now?
Yes, Mataji.
Okay, good. Okay. Hare Krishna?
Yes, Mataji.
Okay, can you see me?
Now we have come back.
Okay, good. I don't know what happened. It was showing on my screen, yeah. Okay, so... Now it doesn't move on my screen.
Mataji, if you use the mouse instead of the keyboard, it will work.
Okay, well, let me get a mouse then. I don't know. Okay, it moved in mine. Did it move in yours also?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, you were right. You know, it takes a few tries to move it. Okay, so, you know, Prabhupada There's a very beautiful quote by Srila Prabhupada, and he said that if you are able to make a whole generation of our children into fine Krishna conscious preachers, that will be the glory of our movement and the glory of your country as well. But if we neglect somehow or other and we lose even one Vaishnava, that's a very great loss. So Prabhupada wanted our children to be educated in Krishna consciousness, because he said that this is real education. When we actually teach children about Krishna, who is the source of everything, he's the source of all material and spiritual knowledge. So Krishna conscious education is especially important in order to develop character in our children. Prabhupada never used to be very impressed with just scholarship, you know, just scholastic achievement, because he said that we see how in today's world there's so much, you know, even people who are very rich and they are highly educated, they lack character. They become, you know, he called them debauchees and rascals because they didn't have any good character, right? So we know that education in itself is not a guarantee for good character. But Vedic education is different. Why? Because Vedic education centers on God, on Krishna. And when we give that education in our children, they develop godly qualities. And the parents who are helping the children become godly, they please Krishna. And this way Krishna also takes us back to Godhead. So among the three things that Prabhupada really stressed while he was here, one was book distribution, everybody knows that. And then the other one was deity worship. And the third one was about his children's gurukula, because he placed so much emphasis on the children's development of good character. And he said such children, they become not only wonderful preachers, but they also become glorious for the country, you know, as ideal citizens. This instruction at heart, I was, you know, when my children were growing up, when they were little, I was thinking of alternative ways to educate them. And I was living I'm in Boise, Idaho, and over there was no temple or devotee association. So we started a little temple at home, a little preaching center. And this way, so that the children will be exposed to Krishna consciousness. And when they came of age, you know, 5 years old, I started thinking about their schooling. And they went to school for to a private school for about 2 years. And I would volunteer and go to the school sometimes to see how things work. And I actually realized that, you know, even though it was a private school, but there was so much lacking there, especially in terms of values, right? And so I started thinking of alternate ways. Especially I was a little dissatisfied because when they came home, there was no time to do any Krishna consciousness with them. I wanted to read Krishna book with them and teach them how to play mridanga. And I kind of realized that how their frame of mind had changed. You know, and it was such a struggle to bring them back into the devotional frame of mind. And so that was the time when I started looking for alternative ways, because I was dissatisfied. And I also had a few experiences at school where, you know, I remember my older son, Radhika Raman, he was in class, and you know, his teacher had spelled the word God on the blackboard, and he had spelled with a small G, and he came home wondering why this was so. You know, just things that was, you know. And also in my younger son's classroom, there was a teacher whose boyfriend would come and they would, you know, kiss casually in class. So some of these things were going on. And so I was thinking, okay, let me try this and see if there's something alternative. And at that time, homeschooling was, at least among devotees, it wasn't very popular. But I thought I'd give it a try. And so in summer, I decided that I'm going to try homeschooling. I'm going to buy a curriculum. I bought a curriculum for the whole year. And you can do that. And I'm going to try it in summer and see if I like it, I'll do it. Otherwise, they can go back to school without any loss. And what I found out is that in 3 months, I covered the entire year's curriculum. So I thought, well, this is not so bad. So that's when I started homeschooling, and I started following a curriculum from outside. And then very soon I kind of got dissatisfied with that and started developing my own curriculum based on Srila Prabhupada's books. And that will be the heart of my seminar, which is tomorrow, using Srila Prabhupada's books, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, in teaching our children, which to my surprise, total amazement, covered not only the spiritual part, anybody would expect, but also the material side of them. In other words, their academic success, which came from Srimad Bhagavatam. And this was not only with my children, but children worldwide who followed this system. So, but this seminar is not for parents, just not for parents who are homeschooling. The principle that I'm going to talk about applies to anybody, even if your children are going to school, or whether you're schooling, or whether you're in any situation, the principles are common, remain the same. And one can take these principles and adapt them in whatever way is possible, you know. I'll move on to the next slide. Now, this is the first section that I will cover today, and that is purity is the force. So before I get to the areas where what we should do to make our home very conducive for our children's Krishna consciousness, I thought we'll cover the don'ts. You know, we all, as devotees, we are very much aware of what we should do, right? We know that we should create a nice Krishna conscious environment at home where children are, you know, here, are exposed to the chanting and deity worship and prasadam and some preaching, opening our home. We are aware of this, and all of us are very much involved in that. Right? But there are some things which, if we do those things, it pretty much negates a lot of the things that we are trying to do. You know, as devotees, we are always we have certain things to do, right? We chant our 16 rounds, and we also follow our four regulated principles, right? No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, and no illicit sex. So these very four things are destroyed when we watch television. Everybody knows what television does to us. Most of the shows, you know, are geared towards promoting these very things that we are trying to give up. Right? Urmila Mataji, the famous educator in the ISKCON movement, she once compared television to a one-eyed guru. You know, how we, you know, a guru comes to the temple maybe once a year, if we are lucky, a few more times in a year. But at home, this one-eyed guru is called the television. Well, it's called the television, which forms the centerpiece in our living room. And nowadays, in every room, practically, bedrooms, bathrooms, everywhere. And this becomes, especially in the living room, it's like the centerpiece. And every day, you know, people sit very faithfully in front of this one-eyed guru and hear from this guru. And the instructions that we get from television is actually captures us in our weakest moments when we're very relaxed, right? When we're ready to take in, to soak in everything. So the problem with television is two. Okay, one is the content. Okay, the content we all agree it can be very damaging. And the other one is the medium, you know, how it is presented to us. And the medium the way television comes to us, it destroys all our aspects of critical thinking. And the reason is because it's a one-way download from the tube to the brain. In other words, there is no interaction. So, you know, they've studied the brain when a person watches TV, and the activity in the brain is practically zero at that time. So what happens is when children watch this medium, then they become mentally lazy because it thinks for you, especially for children. It's so damaging because this becomes reality for them. Everything is given to them on a plate. They don't have to make any effort to extract that information. For example, we are reading a book, right? So you have to open the book. You have to decode the words, you know, in other words, you have to read the words. And then you have to create a picture in your mind what the author is talking about. Suppose he's talking about a beautiful forest scene with nice lakes and river, I mean a little river and mountains or whatever. Then you have to create that picture in your mind. So you're working, you're thinking. You're also using your brain, your critical thinking ability, okay, what this means. And it would be also same thing if you're reading a suspense book or novel or something, you know. Again, you have to think and what you're doing. Or something we talked about, injustice. Your mind is thinking about this and making sense of it. But when it's presented to a child on television, then he doesn't have to do that. And that actually becomes a reality for him. So many times you see how children, if they watch long enough, then that becomes reality. They think this is what reality is. So as a medium, it's very damaging. And they've done now, they've just come out with just new research statistics where they say that reading levels and math levels for children who watch television and on the internet, and now smartphones and these types of digital things, the reading level is going down very, very drastically. They do well for about third grade and then maybe fourth grade, and then it goes downhill, especially teenage years. The reading level is going down, drastically. And that's because, again, whether any form of medium like that, whether it's television or it's internet or it's smartphones, is having that same problem of it thinking for you. And it's so in that way, somebody said, some expert on smartphones was saying, who's doing research on the negative effects of these phones, is that they said that just like today in America, smoking is looked down upon. Everybody understand, okay, smoking is bad for you. In a couple of years, we're going to see like that for phones, smartphones. How damaging is going to make our children? And what to speak of wasting time. An average American child watches 4 hours of television every day. So you can see how much time is wasted and which can be used in such constructive things. I realized when I started teaching my children how much time I have. Because so much time is being wasted on just wasteful things. And that same time can be used for pursuing wonderful hobbies in our children. Music, sculpture, gardening. For devotees, it means so many other things. Reaching out to people, sharing Krishna with others. Harinam, book distribution. So all that time, if you spend on that, it's so wonderful, right? Now, of course, we know a lot of children are not so much emphasizing television. It's more the internet. It's more the problem of internet and spending so much time, screen time. So, and then of course we have addiction. I'll talk more about addiction in my section for internet. So the question will come up, what happens if children don't watch, right? So we are talking about the negative effects of children watching, but then what about children, what about the losses that they're going to have if they don't watch? Because as parents, we know when our children are going to school, they talk about it in school. Everybody knows the latest thing that is going on. And they talk about it, and the child may feel like a social misfit, like, okay, I don't know, I don't really fit in. But then we have to remember that nobody fits in every group. Nobody, even the karmis, they struggle with fitting into every group, that they want to fit in. So a child has to, he understands, well, he has, in the child, he or she has somebody that he does fit in. And that comes to, of course, the educational side of Krishna consciousness. When we have the books, we have the practical side, and then we have the theory side. When we understand through Shastra, the importance of Krishna consciousness, then we are able to understand that a devotee is never without you can take any situation, like suppose children are talking about different things, even though he may not be aware of that particular program, but he can always give an interpretation to that program, right? You know, why? Because the devotee is always of integrity and can always put a context to it, right? For example, if we are talking about a famous guy, I know some years ago when I was giving this seminar, there was this famous golfer and called Tiger Woods, and he was very amazing and a real role model for children. And very soon we heard about him, his fall down. He was a person whom all the children, they emulated. But he fell down morally. He started having extramarital affairs. And that became a very big, and all the advertising companies started pulling him away from the advertising and the endorsements, because he was not suddenly the ideal figure that everybody looked up to. And you can imagine what it created, that kind of situation created on the children, what a devastation for them. And so we understand that then if we hear about that story, we understand, okay, even if we don't know about that person, but we understand, we can give a Krishna conscious perspective on it, right? So a child who doesn't do these things, like go on the internet, watch television, he still appears very intelligent to the outside world, because a Krishna's devotee never appears ignorant. Okay, so we should be sure, and we have to give that confidence to the children through the process of, through the process of discussion, of shastra, of practical devotional service. We are creating in them this faith. That is okay. It's okay to be different. It's okay because he has a practical experience of that, because he appears very intelligent. Okay, so in this way, we keep them involved in Krishna consciousness. They will not miss that. Okay. Okay. So and then the internet is another very big aspect in our lives, right? It's even bigger than television. Television has practically become outdated now. And the problem, the main problem that I will quickly mention about internet, pretty much all these points that I talked about, television also applies for internet. The one thing that stands out for internet is that it's, television you can kind of relate by the number of channels you expose your children to. The internet, there's no control. It can be streaming 24 hours a day. And what is the content, internet? And if children are long enough on the internet, they will come across things which are very compromising, sexually compromising, pornography. It's guaranteed that children will come across that, because this is what internet is all about. They are geared to those temptations, especially for children. It's very difficult. And then, of course, the problem is social media. You know, there's so much statistics how children are trying to find their identity through social media. They are trying to develop relationships through social media, and these things are not about relationship because it's so artificial. It's not about real people, right, whom we can communicate with. So, with the result that in today's world, the statistics are showing that children, especially teenagers, who are very much addicted to that, they're having all kinds of problems. Not only academically, being socially misfits, because if you notice how if children are together, like young teenagers, they are hanging around together, and after a little while, they're in their own world. They're suddenly quiet, and they pull out their phones from their pockets, and they're punching buttons, right? They've suddenly stopped communicating. And if you notice any gathering of young people, you can see that. So they lack the. So they, this becomes, as I said, this becomes very handicapped, socially handicapped. And then the addiction can become so bad that the depression, the stress, and of course a lot of suicide that's connected with that. The suicide rates in schools have gone up, and a lot of them is connected. The parents, if you talk to them, they know that it's all connected to social media. Now, we may say, I'm keeping my children protected, but they're dealing with their peers in school. So how do you really give them that conviction? That's the question. And another point, another thing is the internet the problem with the internet is the source. You know, is the source. You know, we've discussed the content, but the source is more problematic because, you know, all the websites, they do not talk about the source. So in other words, if you're going on the internet to gather some knowledge, for example, about health, okay, there's a lot of information about this problem and that problem in health, but then who are we dealing with? We don't know if they're qualified because there's no author. And as a devotee, for us, source is more important than content. We all understand that, right? So we, for example, Prabhupada gave the example of a mother. The mother, or a father, they may not know everything, but yet because they have the good intentions, whatever they give, it will be beneficial for that child. So in other words, why? Because the source is good. The source is beneficial. The source is trusted. And this is just the opposite for the internet. There may be a lot of information, but the source is quite questionable. And that can be very, very detrimental in harming the child. And of course, there's addiction that I said. I would talk a little bit about it. You know, too much, this, especially internet addiction is a well-known problem. Well, they've done research that it works in the same way as if one takes cocaine drugs. There's a certain hormone thing that dopamine or something, which is is similar. Is it a hormone that is released when one takes drugs, which creates a sensation of needing more and more and more? And internet is like that. You know, when once we get addicted to it, you can't live without it. And it's very, and there have been cases where children have killed themselves because their parents stopped it. So before we come to that point, of course, we should be very much aware how we have to limit this medium to a very great extent. So what is the solution? We definitely cannot live in the Stone Age, because everything around us, is about going to on the internet. So how do we deal with it? We simply use it for the purpose it's meant to be used. For example, it's a good substitute for postal service. You can use it for emails or for gathering of statistics, for getting some information, maybe directions to a place on the phone, and then we log off. Just like we should use it like a tool, just like we would use a tool, like a hammer. We have a hammer, we use it for the purpose it's intended for, and then we keep it away. We don't carry it around. We don't have a relationship with it, right? So in the same way, we have to treat this medium of the internet. And this way, sometimes we see the problem how as adults we get addicted to it, right? And then it's very hard because the children are thinking, my parents are on it. We are looking for different things. And social media, we ourselves. So we have to set up that example as a family. We have to set the example as a community where we can help our children not become TV or internet conditioned. Okay, so I think I'm going to stop here at this point on this important topic of limiting internet. If anybody has any questions and would like to ask any questions on this topic, please feel free to do it at this point.
Hare Krishna, so if you are on the phone and you want to unmute yourself, it is *6 to unmute. You can take turns. And if you are on the app, you can self-unmute by clicking on the mic button that is there against your name.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Mataji, thank you so much for all the information and knowledge you're sharing with us on this topic. I had a quick question. One is that we talk about social media and everything. And there is a thought that since we are surrounded by it, like it's how do we teach our children to use it, even in terms of social media, how to use it for, say, Krishna conscious activities or whatever. What are your thoughts on that? Should we totally shut them away from it or try to somehow teach them? And again, how do we teach them? That's another bigger question. But how, you know, to teach them how to use it, because even the devotees use it, you know, for spreading information about programs, you know, lectures, whatever, so many other purposes it can be used for. But how do we teach them that? And at what age should we start that? Hello, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Yeah, okay. So we hear stories where parents give their children a smartphone like at the age of 10, like that, or 12. So that's something we can avoid. Because if a child has access to the phone 24 hours a day, then naturally the temptation is greater to be on it. Okay? So I don't think we should be in a rush to do that, because that creates problems. Okay? So once we have that restraint, then we will be more able to train them and educate them how to use it in a responsible way. You know, when you need it for educational things, you know, sometimes they have assignments from school also, right, where they have to use the internet. So the idea is that, yes, it should be used, but for purpose that's necessary, and not for entertainment, you see. The problem is that children are using it for entertainment, basically, you know, for video games, for social media things, which is where the problem starts. You know, if you hear all the things, the research that has gone into it, the children, teenagers who are actually crying out, and they've gone through so much, you know, misery and suffering that they wish they'd never had it. They've done surveys of the children themselves who have these medium and they wish they didn't have it. You know, you see what I mean? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Hari Bol? Yeah.
But how do you do it? That's a difficult part, right? Because I know you mentioned social media to keep them away, but I don't know whether we can keep them away, the tutorial, that's not going to work. They might be with them. So even educating them, putting social media to good use.
That could be a start. Yes, Mataji, that could be a start. In other words, some education has to be there to educate them what is good and what is bad for them. That's the point. You see, we have to start somewhere. We can't just follow the herd, you know. And right now the herd is also realizing, the parents are realizing their mistake. And for some of them it's too late. A lot of them it's too late, you see. So that's the point, is that we have to start becoming aware of these things and not become carefree, that it's going to be okay. Okay?
Okay, thank you, Mataji.
Yeah, so I mean, you saying no to it now is going to be, they're going to thank you later, you see? You're going to thank yourself later. I know saying no is difficult now, because children are children, you know? They're not going to understand that these things are bad for them. But we know, and by, just like, you know, we say no to so many things, right? They don't want to brush their teeth, but we say, no, you have to. They want to do something, you know, stay up late or whatever, or do something that we know is, we have to say no to them, because it creates danger for them. It's a problem for them, you see? So the same thing we should treat, this medium, same way we should treat it.
Right.
Yeah. And we can start somewhere. Yeah, go ahead.
In your opinion, is it something even later on, like how we always say no to drugs, like always say no to drugs, it doesn't matter whether you're 5-year-old or 50-year-old. Same way for social media and internet and everything. Is it something which should just be off limits totally, or you think there is a place or there's a reason why, because most of the world uses it, and it would also be used at work later on, you know, in careers and everything. Is that something we should be training them for, or they can just train themselves when it's required, and we really don't we can just put it off limits totally. You know, like how you say off, no, totally off limits to drugs or alcohol or whatever. Should this be in a similar category?
Yeah, in terms of phones, I believe that. I mean, if they need phones for their safety, you can give them flip phones, you see. But in terms, you know, if they don't need to have a phone, then why give them a phone? You see, but in terms of internet, you know, I know that children in school sometimes require that for their assignments. So you cannot, you know, that is required. So they have to get on the internet and do those things. You see, but giving them, just handing them a phone, that could be something we should avoid, you see. But in terms of using computers and doing their work, we can teach them how to be responsible users. And do their work and log off. Yeah, there is definitely uses for it. And we are living in a world where you cannot completely ignore it. You know, we are going on a trip, on a vacation, and we need, you know, the phone for directions. You know, so we do have some use for those things. You know, and then we can have those. As adults, we can keep those phones. But to give little children access to a phone is very damaging. They've done research where it warps the brain in a certain way, which is so damaging that you can never bring, take it back. You know, in other words, the brain substance is molded in such a way that is irreparable. Where in a certain way, they've done research that children who grew up with these smartphones at work, they are a lot more inefficient. Because when they're working on their computers, they cannot totally focus on it. They have to keep looking at their phones. And they've done research, all kinds of research on that. So now the world is realizing, you see? And we don't want to be the last ones, you know, to realize. Especially as devotees, we understand in terms of, morally and value-wise, the damage it can do to them, you see? So all I'm saying is that start it now before, you know, let's be aware of it, help each other as a community, and this way it can be more successful, you know?
Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Hare Krishna, Mataji, I have a question. Hare Krishna,
yes.
Can you hear
me? Yes, I can hear you, definitely, yes.
Thank you. Thank you for such beautiful pointers. One quick question was, I know that the children, for them, the first role model is the parents. Now, I as a parent, I see that I'm also on the phone, not for the other things, but for the messages that we have from Krishna consciousness. So there are many lectures, or I might listen to a bhajan, or we have conference calls. We have so many things going on. So my daughter says, you know, you are also on the phone, but I tell her that, you know, this is Krishna conscious ones. You can also too. But you know, at the end of the day, it's the mindset comes in their mind that, you know what, my mom is on the phone, my daughter is on the phone, so why not me? They will not see the content part of it, but they will get this thing. So coming to the question, that means that we have to really, as you said, restrict ourselves before we start talking to our kids about it. Am I correct? But how do we do that?
Yeah, definitely. That's a very good point. A practical, you know, an example that we want to set our children. You know, the best thing is just to keep it away. Like, you know, to pick it out, to take it out and do what you have to do, and then you put it in a drawer or just forget about it. Like, the problem is that there's constant reminders on the phone going on, and that's going on, and the children know that our whole life is revolves around that, you know, that information. So that's when, you know, they feel that. So in other words, there is a use for these things, and we have to be very much, set it away when the use is finished. And this way we can set a better example to our children, okay? Yeah, and this idea of Krishna consciousness versus mundane use is very important, like you said. And that, you know, will come as we raise our children with information and knowledge from Shastra. You see, Krishna consciousness, there has to be a higher taste, in other words, okay? So there has to be a higher taste. So when we create, and that's why this seminar is The Art of Krishna Conscious Parenting. In other words, everything is a package. Okay, we can't expect children to understand unless they get a little higher taste. They understand through the intelligence, not just through our practical devotional service, but also through our intelligence. Through the intelligence, they understand, well, you know, this is not good for me as a devotee. This is going to pollute my mind, and I don't want it to happen. I'm a devotee, and I'm proud to be a devotee. So unless this identity, this pride comes in the identity as devotees, these things become very, very difficult. We can't force things on our children, you know. It has also something that has to come from within. However, there is a time when we have to say no. You know, Prabhupada said that, between 5 and 10 is a time where we have to be very strict to our children. Because this is the time when they actually make mistakes that can be mistakes for life, that it may be too late, you know, for going back, you see. And we have to say no. Yes, we have to say no. So all this is like, you know, we have to see where, how we can regulate everything. Definitely one thing I feel is that we don't need to hand them the phone so early in their life. I don't know if any of you have, struggles with that, but if you do, then I would say do it now before it's too late. You know?
Thank you, Mataji. But my question is, like, in my daughter's class, everybody has got a phone, except she is the only one probably in the entire thing. And there's so much of
a pressure
now. Everybody having one, and I'm the one who's singled out. So how do I really handle it? I'm not that strong, but I don't know what can I do.
Okay. So there's a lot of shows now by Karmis, you know, where they're talking about this point. What do they call the TED shows or something? I don't know if any of you are aware. They're called the TED shows, TED. Yeah, TED Talk. So they have a lot of that where they actually give you solutions of these things. They're actually encouraging parents to say no to their children and to actually, before it's too late. And how to actually, you know, go with it. If they can do it, definitely we can do it, you know, because we have this empowerment of Krishna consciousness, the complete conviction that comes from, our Shastra, you know, of a life that's wholesome, that's developed more in people, reality, you know, relationships, rather than some kind of artificial, you know, life with the screens and machines, you know. So some of these things. So we can do some of that, you know. We can watch them and see. They give solutions of how, you know, how children, they don't have to. They can say no. We can say no to them, and by giving them a more wholesome life. And for us, it's a more wholesome life in Krishna consciousness. Okay.
Thank you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So this is my presentation on the television and the internet. So we can move on to the next slide. Okay. So now I'll cover just two or three more slides after this, because let's see what time it is. Yeah, okay. So the next slide is the next few slides will talk about the different things that we should do, which make our children, which make the home very conducive for the Krishna consciousness of our children. And one is the morning program. This is the morning program means the Guru Astika prayers and the Tulsi Aarti and Nishing Aarti that we do, you know, and we sing in the morning. And it's a very important part of the day because it helps in, creating good feelings, you know, good Krishna conscious, godly feelings. And that kind of becomes like a armor, a shield that helps us to go into the world protected, right? And we know, all of us as devotees know the benefit of a good morning program. You know how it changes the whole mind frame, how we see, view life. It helps us to make our first connection with Krishna in the morning, you know? So, of course, with children, also it works the same way. With small children, it's not a problem, right? They're not going to school the first thing in the morning, so one can have that. But for children who are going to school, it becomes a very big challenge because there is no time. So what do we do? So we can make it flexible. We can do something very short. You know, we can the child can sing in front of the deities, maybe take 5 minutes to sing the prayers. And or if we don't have time for that, then we can maybe sing in the car, you know, while we're going to school. In other words, it's important that we do the morning program. Now, for a lot of the children is in household life, it's hard to do it at 4:30 in the morning. So one can be flexible. We can do it later. But the idea is that one should start the day with the morning program because it becomes like a discipline. So that when children grow up and they go out into the world in their own paths, then they will always, those first impressions, those first many, many years of this discipline is going to come very beneficial for them because they will know, this is how I start my day. This is how I remember Krishna. I go in front of the deities and we bow down. And this way it creates good future for them. So, for children, sometimes it's, you know, there's a lot of struggle and they don't want to do it. They become very distracting. They become very disturbing. They disturb the program. So one has to just, you know, engage them, become tolerant. The most important thing is to make it enjoyable and positive for them. Okay? So that's one part of it. And then the second part, which is a nice part, is the japa. So japa and any form of chanting of the holy name like kirtan is so important for the children because it's, you know, Prabhupada gives such a strong example in the story of Ajamal, you know, how we, you know, in spite of the good training, and all of you as devotees are giving this Krishna conscious training to your children. So similarly, Ajamal got a very good Brahminical training, but in spite of that, he fell down. Okay? In spite of all that Brahminical training, he fell down. So it makes us think, oh, are my children going to withstand all this, especially in today's world when there's so much lures of drugs, illicit sex, and all these things? Are children going to be able to withstand all that temptation? You know, especially with this bombardment of, you know, movies and you know, billboards. It's everywhere. It's all around. How can we save our children from all this, you know, degradation and this exposure to all these things? And that's where you know, the power of the holy name comes in. We saw in the story of Ajana how even though he fell down, at the end what happened? He was saved because of the holy name. So the holy name has so much power that even it gives feelings of bhakti even to the most degraded and fallen. What to speak of devotees, what to speak of our children. It's going to create in them, they will be able, if they take shelter of the holy name through japa and kirtan, then they will be able to withstand, you know, withstand all these things. And you see how Prabhupada in his own lifetime, he showed that. Among all the instructions he gave us, he said chanting on 16 rounds is the most important, right? In the early days when he came, if he had told his followers, you know, you should follow the four regulative principles, they would have looked at him totally thinking that it's totally not possible, right? They would have been shocked. They would have said, no, there's no way I'm going to give up these things, these sinful things. It was part of their life. And how did Prabhupada, how was he able to do it? When they got the taste of the holy name. Then they automatically, they became sadhus. And they were able to give up all their, you know, bad, you know, sinful ways, you know? So japa is very, very beneficial for children, but just going to seminars and hearing from parents is also very difficult for children to take it up, and there's a lot of struggle for that. So what I did is I gave them, you know, beads when they were very little. You know, they were like 3 years old, and so my younger one was 3 and older one was 5, and I would sit with them and chat one round like that. And this way they don't think it's some kind of some boring thing or a burden, because it becomes enjoyable for them when the parents sit down and then I would try to inspire them, saying that how Krishna is dancing on their tongue, like that. So one can make it very positive. Then there could be groups in the temple where all the children get together and make it like a japa group. And in our temple, every Ekadashi would get together, all the devotees in the community would get together and chant japa together. And they would chant because they saw everybody else chanting. Now, one thing we have to remember, we have to be careful about, is that we should not make japa a sort of punishment for the children. You know, Prabhupada warned us against it. You know, for example, we don't tell them, okay, if you don't do this thing, what I'm telling you, you'll have to chant an extra round. So what message does it give? Okay, the japa is a punishment. I'm going to be punished with an extra round. Right? So we don't do that. And we also don't set it up like a reward. We don't say, if you chant two rounds, I'm going to give you an ice cream. Okay? So we have to be careful. In other words, we don't push our children. We don't use it as a punishment. And we also don't use it as a reward. So Prabhupada warned us against both these things. Okay? One time, Prabhupada was very upset because small children in the group were not given beans. And he found out from somebody, from one of his servants. And he said, I never said you should not give them beads. Why is that? If they don't get beads, how will they learn? The point is that you have to train them how to use the beads, not that you take it away from them. Okay? So all these wonderful incidents with Prabhupada, and we can read it up and see how much Prabhupada wanted children to take up this japa. But we should be very, very careful and not force them into it. We can go slowly, and we have to create an environment for them. That's what I noticed with my children and with other struggles of other parents, is that if it becomes a chore or some kind of burden, they actually don't like it. But if we as a family, we sit together and make it so positive, make it enjoyable, then they take to it better. You know? So that's one thing, creating this love for the holy name is going to be the biggest shield in this age of Kali. Okay, so I'm going to quickly open this up for any question, and then I'll move on to the next two slides. Oh, if there's no questions, I can finish this other slides also.
*6 to unmute in case you're on phone.
Okay, so let's move on to the next one, and that's eating only prasadam. So again, very important thing for everyone, and we know, you know, how powerful prasadam is. Just if you're a preacher and you try to preach, you can give as much philosophy for a long time, but it makes an effect, yes. But as soon as you bring a plate of prasadam, what happens? Immediately the heart melts, right? And the most difficult person that you're trying to preach suddenly becomes so malleable, right? Because prasadam is so, it's very powerful. It's very powerful. It goes straight to the soul, you know? Why? Because it's coming through the mouth and it hits directly to our soul. And that's why prasadam has such a great effect on our consciousness, right? We are, they're the same, we are what we eat. So in other words, if you eat food that's not cooked by devotees, what happens? We take the consciousness of that non-devotee who's cooked that food, and we take it into us. We imbibe it. Just like, you know, if you see a beautiful, not so beautiful painting, you know, it's all modern art and gruesome and stuff like that, then what it does is create in you those feelings, right? Because you're taking the consciousness of that person and you're taking it in, right? So same thing with food. If you've eaten prasadam and then you suddenly eat food that's not been offered, you'll see the difference. It really hits you, right? So it's important that we do that. And our biggest weapon is our own example as parents. You know, when we are ourselves very careful about these things, our children will naturally take it up. I remember for our family, my example, you know, my husband was a good example for my children because he would travel a lot through his work. And sometimes he would travel like a week in some far out place in like, you know, Europe or Asia, or, you know, East Asia. And I would cook a lot and but then it would run out. And he was a good example because he stuck to it and he would live on nuts and fruits and things like that. So it made an impact on the children. They thought, well, if my father can do it, I can do it. And so later on when they went to college and they were on their own, then they tried to keep that principle. Okay, it's not going to be easy, but it's something I can do. Okay, so children who grow up in that, having faith in a prasadam versus non-devotee food, they will carry that with them. Even when life becomes a struggle, you know, there will be some slips and all those things. But in principle, they will be able to be strong, you know. And for children, teaching is a very big thing. And especially with a small child, you notice, I'm sure you've noticed how, it's such a big thing, you know, eating good food, variety. So when my children are little, I remember cooking a lot because they're so restless when it comes to food. They need so much variety. And if you don't give them, then naturally they want it somewhere else. Okay, it's harder then. But later on, as the children get older, we don't have to do so much because they understand. They are more able to, and other interests take over, right? Other interests take over. So I remember struggling through issues like, you know, being invited, you know, and for outside parties, you know, and of course, when they were going to school for 2 years, you know, they did go to school for 2 years, and then they, you know, they had friends and how to deal with that. So all these issues, you know, they become quite challenging sometimes, right? But the point is, again, the combination of practical devotional service and the shastric background, you know, learning from shastra, understanding through our intelligence, through stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam, understanding why we are different, why it is so important to be a devotee, and how to say no, or for children, for parents, they can actually have alternatives. You know, I remember that, you know, when there was a pizza party or something, you know how to explain it to the host, you know, why we cannot eat that pizza. And what I would say is that we don't eat food that has been cooked in a kitchen that also cooks meat. So that becomes very acceptable to everyone in this country, because, you know, we have kosher rules that Jews follow, right? So they are aware of that and they respect that. So it's not just about food that has meat in it, because they're going to tell you, okay, well, this is vegetarian. Believe me, there's nothing meat in it. But we don't eat food that's cooked in a kitchen where there's meat, okay? So that becomes something that we can apply, we can use in our life. And the other thing is to take your own food there. You know, I remember doing that so many times, you know, where, you know, where even if you are going to a place where it's a non-devotee, then I would, you know, we can take things like rice and sabji, you know, paneer sabji or pakoras. And this way, and then quietly the children would take their plate and put those three things on their plate, you know, and while everybody else gets prasadam. So doing all these kind of tricks really helps, you know. And then if nothing can work out, nothing works out, okay, it's a situation where then we say no to it. Okay, so children understand, okay, there's times when we have to put our feet down and say, no, I'm not going to do that. And then children, it's really hard for them though, it's still hard for them, right? So we make a big pizza party at home. We have a nice pizza at home and we enjoy the prasadam. So the children know that Krishna consciousness is not about denying. It's about something more wonderful. Okay, something even better. Because you know how the life of a devotee is so much full of joy, so much excitement. There's always parties going on. Devotees are always getting together and enjoying prasadam together. You know, so it's not about that. The joys of Krishna consciousness should always overrule these things that we have to avoid. And this way the children get such a positive feeling about saying no to these things. So if we do these things, then the children really don't miss it. And when they get older, they're strong enough. where they have to go on work situations. I'm sure your husband, you know, is or if the husbands are there, you know, I'm sure, you know, they go to, you know, events at work where they have to go to, you know, a restaurant, and they have to sit with their colleagues and eat, you know, and be part of that, right? Again, that we can use the, for them also, it can be done. And how can it be done? If we set up a standard right from the beginning, when we get the job, we get a standard, we set a certain standard, and we stick to it, you know? In other words, if we don't stick to it, then we become a subject of ridicule. People start laughing and pushing us to give in. Oh, yeah, it's okay, you know, because we've done it. We gave in once, right? But if you put up a standard, then they actually respect you for your values, right? So when we go to a restaurant, we can order. I know my husband did that, and my children do it. You know, you can order things like salad. You can order things like, you know, nice big fruit plate for the second course, maybe. And for the third course, you can just eat strawberries and cream or something. Okay? So if you keep these principles ourselves, our children will follow that. Now, how important this one activity, which consumes our life, right? Every woman knows that she spends practically all her time in the kitchen, cooking meals, right? So it's one aspect we want to give our children, these important values, which really, being a devotee doesn't mean just going to the temple. Being a devotee doesn't mean just we put tilak and wear devotional clothes. Being a devotee means that how we can apply these things in our life in a way that's convincing, in a way that's joyful, in a way that we feel proud about, we know. But one thing we have to be careful, we don't put down people who don't do this. We teach our children how to respect everyone, but respect doesn't mean we have to follow them, okay? So this is one take on prashad that we can give our children. So the next one, because I don't know how much time we have, I think we should cover everything, is good association. Again, we all understand the value of how good association, I've already talked a lot about that, how role models are so important for our children. You know, when a child is growing up, Hare Krishna, yes? Did anybody have a question or something? I'm not sure, somebody spoke there. Okay. Anyway, so I already talked about role models, how important good role models are. You know, especially in the first 5 years of a children's life, the time when we think, oh, children just eat and they're just going to play. Yeah, it's true. They eat and play the whole day. But also, they are forming impressions during that time, which are kind of, you can predict what they're going to be in their future life. So important, those first years of children's life. And this is where we give them this wonderful association, not when we wait for them to become teenagers. We want to give them good association right from the beginning, which means we have to put role models in front of them that they can emulate. They can desire to want to be like that. Okay, so those are good role models. And where are those good models? Those good role models are among devotees. Because Prabhupada explained how we can find goodness in the world, right? Sometimes you see people who are really, really good, right? But the problem is in this material world, there's no pure goodness, Shuddha Sattva. Any goodness is mixed with passion and ignorance. And that's why you see, I gave that example of that golf player. You know, how he was such a, you know, wonderful example for the children and for the adults, and then suddenly what happened? He fell down. Passion, ignorance was going on for years. It was all hiding, right? And everybody's image of him completely shattered. Why? Because it's very difficult to find pure goodness in this material world, right? So the real role models are those, our spiritual role models. The role models we see in among our gurus, among our sannyasis, among senior devotees. You know, where if children get association of people like that, then you know that they're set for life. They know this is what they're going to get. And I remember in my own life with children, you know, we were pretty much isolated. Boy, we had, there was nothing there. We had to make our own center in order to, you know, create a situation. And, but we were, you know, we would be sometimes fortunate and there would be sannyasi. There were, especially one sannyasi that was coming very regularly, like two or three times a year. And that was Ganapati Swami, and his, he would be preaching. He was doing book distribution in areas where there was no temples, and we were one of them. And I remember the children getting association of him, which made such lasting impressions in their life. You know, just being with him and learning from him, just simple things of like how to, how to even clean. You know, clean a temple, or even how to, you know, do book distribution. They even traveled with him outside of India. You know, they went to Calcutta with him when they were little children. And the training they got with from him personally, you know, how to, you know, get up in the morning to remember Lord Krishna, you know, how to, so many little things. So important to have, give our children this association of saintly people that will really make their life, okay? So these three, and of course our own example is very important. You know? Even though we are not perfect, but understanding that Krishna is always part of our life is going to take away those imperfections. And knowing that Krishna is part of the picture and we are on the path of perfection, it does a lot for our children in creating good character in them. And of course, temple is a wonderful resource for that. We have dramas, we have Sunday schools, we have bhakti rituals. We should take advantage of everything and get our children involved. It keeps them away from unhealthy things, you know, and especially good adult association is also important, and their own peer association. Okay. And then, of course, we have deity worship as my last slide for today. And this is a very important thing, deity worship. You know, there was a quote by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jaya Dharma, where he says that children who are grown up in cultures where there's no form of the Lord, in the form of deities, they actually end up becoming quite materialistic and sometimes atheistic. Because children need a form. Krishna, children need to relate to God in the form of a deity. In other words, they need to see Krishna as a person, and that it becomes the basis not to drive out impersonalism. You know how today in today's world, everything is so impersonal. You know, the child goes to college, the entire philosophy department is all about impersonalism. Everything is about important, day-to-day life. Everything is about phones, all these things, you know, internet, all about impersonalism. So we've forgotten the art of being personal. Right? So what deity worship does to a child's mind is it completely rejects impersonalism in their life. So that later on, they'll never struggle with the point of how to see Krishna as a person. And a lot of us who didn't go with this personal form of the Lord, even as growing up as children, we can relate with that. You know, a lot of our parents have been Arya Samajis or this and that, and where the form of Krishna is totally denied, right? And how difficult as devotees it is when we become devotees to actually relate to Krishna as a person. I know I would preach to young people and Americans and how difficult they would have that they would be able to take the philosophy, but when it actually came to bringing them to the temple and actually seeing the deities, it would be so hard for them. They couldn't connect. They would have, and it would be such a struggle for them because their whole life was based on being impersonal. Just eating, the process of eating meat, you have to depersonalize the animal that we're eating. Otherwise, you can't eat it, right? We can't eat the animal. So everything is about depersonalizing, right? So children growing up with deities, they become very personal with everyone around them. They make wonderful Vaishnava relationships just by the fact that they've seen Krishna as a person in the form of deities. So it's very nice to encourage our children to do it in some form or the other, whatever we can manage, whatever is practical for us. which means that, okay, maybe every Ekadashi, they are, you know, bathing the deities, dressing them, ornamenting them, offering them food, you know, spending 1 or 2 hours, 1 hour with deity worship. If they cannot, you know, if that's impossible, then at least we can have them do an artik, you know, maybe on Sundays or something. Or maybe if you can do as much as you can do, you know, it's wonderful, you know. So this way they can focus on the form of the Lord. They can relate to the Lord. You know how children are, and especially with little children, you know, it's so sweet because they relate with Krishna as a person. They understand, oh, Krishna is hungry today. You know, he needs to eat, or he's hot today. So they're relating with Krishna as a person. And that becomes a great way to evoke the love of Krishna so effortlessly. You know, because they evoke that love of Krishna in them so, so wonderfully. And of course, we teach them so many other things, how to offer everything to the Lord, how and good habits like cleanliness, punctuality. You know, punctuality in home worship, we are flexible, right? But there is some, you know, some kind of, in other words, if you're offering once a day, at least we know that's punctuality. At least we know we have to do that. You know, it trains our mind and cleanliness. So we are training them to see Krishna as a person, to have a loving relationship, you know, how Krishna is my friend. However, we are setting boundaries to them. And deity worship becomes a great way to set boundaries. Okay, did you wash your hands before you come and touch Krishna? You know, okay, you need to shower first before you come here, like that. You know, so we're teaching them how Krishna is a person, yet he's not to be treated casually. There's boundaries, okay? So, and just about everything. I mean, when you have deities, they become the center of the house. You know, because anything we do, festivals, everything is for the deities. You know, when we read Shastra, everything. So all the activities, the deities become the center. So the impact in our lives is that, oh, okay, Krishna is the person, is the chief person in my house. So the whole house naturally becomes a temple just by that act of doing that. Okay, so I'm going to stop here and ask for any questions if anyone has in any of the 3 slides that we covered. And that was prasada, morning program, good association, and deity worship.
If anyone wants to mute, you can press *6. If you are on the app, you can self-unmute.
Mataji, I had a question.
Yes.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. I had a question about the morning program.
Yes.
I mean, it may not be possible, at least for the kids, at least for my kid, to do it in the morning. We are already rushing and it's barely reaching on time. But is it possible that when she comes back, she can do a kirtan? Will that be also a possibility? Just trying to do something practical, if I can strike a compromise here.
Yes, I didn't mention that. There's so many areas that I didn't talk about. Yes, that is actually a very wonderful, desirable way for people, for children who have to really absolutely are not able to do it in the morning, okay? So yes, you can do something in the evening with them, even if it means sitting down in front of the deities and singing the evening aarti song, you know, the Gaura aarti, or whichever works out for you, you know, chanting together, maybe a little kirtan together, or if you want to do a little aarti together. It's up, you know, whatever is most suitable for you, you can do that, definitely. You know, coming together as family, you know, even if the husband is coming home late or something, you can do it with the children. Whatever is flexible for your lifestyle, you can do that.
Thank you, Mataji. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna,
yes.
Mataji.
Dhanushana.
Yes. Can you talk about the program or the deity worship for kids? How far should they be very perfect in the service which they are doing? Like, how far should they be the perfect service?
Okay, let's see. How far? What did you say? How far can they go? how much can it be? Oh, perfection. Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely, we don't need to be perfect. And, you know, for we are humans and we have imperfections. So again, so when I talked about flexibility, you know, how we can be flexible. You know, children's attention span is a lot less, the little children. So we can make it shorter. We can do an aarti in the morning with them, which only involves with maybe incense or a flower and charmer, or even just with flower. I mean, you can make it as flexible as you want. You know, the idea behind is to remember the Lord and to make it joyful and sing. Sometimes, you know, children want to sing and dance and make a lot of noise, you know, and just, you know, feel the fun of it. It's okay. It's okay. Even that's okay because they are getting it. They're still chanting Krishna's holy names, you know.
Sure, Mataji. Thank you.
Yes.
Mataji, one more question. When mm-hmm. we talk about association, now when kids mm-hmm. are in middle school or high school, we cannot keep a track on which friend circles they have. And when we are like, it's not compulsory that they might be in a devotee friend circle when they are in schools. So how
yeah, yeah.
do we correct them? Or because then kids say, do not judge my friends. And then that becomes very hard for me to understand that part. I do not want to be bossy also at them.
Yes. Yes, Mataji, very nice question. Yeah, the challenges are different in schools because we are not there and the children are not devotees, right? So the, again, that point is that we need to give them the, again, the intelligence has to be fed. In other words, understanding through Shastra how to discriminate in what's good for you and what's not good for you. What is good association and what's not so good association. But children still have to associate, which is okay. But they are doing it from a position of strength. In other words, as devotees, if they have a good Krishna conscious lifestyle, they're going from a position of strength. Some kind of sadhana, good sadhana, good shastic reading with them, all this will create in them the strength to overcome any challenges. So in other words, friends are there and it's okay to even have friends. But the point that we try to avoid as devotees is intimate friendship. Okay, intimate friendship means that, you know, of course we understand between the boy and girl, that we understand, right? That's very detrimental. But even with among girls and girls and boys, there is friendship and that's okay. But, you know, among non-devotees, but we have to see it for what it is. In other words, we don't, you know, hang around with them to the point where we're watching TV together or videos together or, you know, we are sharing our innermost feelings and stuff like that, you know. So there's a difference between the type of association we do, our children do with them, you see. Sometimes it could be something very innocent, which they have attraction to a certain friend. And the friend, you know, she's a nice friend. It's okay. But then so that's why it's important through Shastra, we give them on their own that understanding through discussion. You know, when we do Srimad Bhagavatam, then we are actually discussing the practical life situations. And it all comes out. Children become open and they discuss the struggle because it's so clear to the Bhagavatam, okay, this is the way it should be. This is ideal and this is how, you know, this is so powerful, right? But then we see the contrast of it, the struggles in modern life, in schools, you know. It's just how to deal with those things, you know. And so that conviction that comes through Shastra, through Srimad Bhagavatam, we are able to apply that in our life in an intelligent way without looking down on these people, without looking down on our friends. We can maintain a respect, but at the same time, we know, we understand. We have to give the children the understanding that it's different to give respect versus following or imitating them. Okay? So that intelligence has to be given to them right from the beginning. We don't wait. We don't think that, okay, well, they'll struggle through it. It will happen, and then later on, somehow, some way, something will happen where they can understand and become fixed up like I am. We can't think like that. The children, they're looking for answers. there's so much conflict in their life. You know, we can't blame them, you know. But at the same time, we have to train them. We have to train them. And Prabhupada has given us everything we need. We just have to take advantage of it and actually train them in a way. And we're keeping in mind what they are being exposed to. It is very difficult for them. But it can be done. It can be done. Even for you, for all our children going through all those 8 hours of exposure to things which are totally against the things that we may be thinking of, right? Or that we try to follow. Yeah.
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, any other questions or comments? Anybody would like to share? Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj, for such a wonderful session today. My question is more on the theme. I started my Krishna conscious journey just a couple of years back, and by the time my daughter was already a teenager, she's 16 now. Mm-hmm. Any tips for her?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. There's a lot of parents who came into Krishna consciousness later in their life, and that's okay. You know, again, giving our children, even at this stage, whatever we can give in terms of Krishna consciousness, especially the exposure to other children their age in the temple, is a very powerful medium, you know, where they can be, you know, they can have friends who are also devotees. It's a very wonderful way to help them, and our own example also. And then what happens is when, you know, even though they may not have been raised in Krishna consciousness, but because we are giving them Krishna consciousness in a way, in a joyful way, which can attract, Krishna can attract their hearts. And so that when the time comes, when they're ready for it, then they will take to it, you see? So Krishna has these buttons in us, you know, and we don't know when he's going to push which button in them, you know. So in other words, we give them what we can in the best way possible, and then at some point in their life, Krishna is going to bring them to Krishna, you know, in full blast, you know. He can do that. And I have, there's examples of that, you know. I remember that, you know, my son had a friend who was in UK who was having this struggle, and somehow he was convinced to go to Mayapur for some kind of bhakti shakti or something, and he went through that, and his whole life changed from then on, you see. So we don't know when Krishna is going to push that button for that child. What we can do is give them as much association they can get, okay, which means the temple association, you know, getting them involved in dramas and plays. These are such fun activities, right? Maybe some kind of, you know, and if you have a bhakti riksha that you're going to, then getting him involved, maybe having activities for them, for children over there, you know, and then having him volunteer maybe something in the temple that he's good at. In other words, getting more and more involved. And then, of course, what to speak of association of senior devotees, maybe a devotee that who can, you know, inspire him. And the, of course, the association of sannyasis and gurus also can be very nice. Sometimes you have children who are totally not into it, and I know those struggles are there. Then you can invite them to your house. These people, you can, if you invite devotees to your house, then children are more, you know, they are more at ease, and they are willing to hear more. And it has, sometimes it has a greater impact sometimes, right? I don't know what the situation is with you, but there's all types of struggles dealing with children who are just getting into Krishna consciousness at this stage. Yes?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Mother.
Mataji, I just wanted to ask something. Like my son, sometimes when he's with devotee's son and all, he's so conscious, so active, so devote. He does all the devotional activities. But meantime, when he starts going to the school, he gets distracted soon and he stops some of his regular activities. And again, to get back him to the same phase, it sometimes sounds difficult for me.
Yes, it's a good question. And so again, I think that will be will come in the tomorrow's seminar, how to create that steadiness in the children is through regular reading from Shastra, you see, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. So by doing that, these convictions stays. It actually has a place there in the heart, you see. Otherwise, it becomes on and off type thing, you know. Okay, but then also children are children, you know, sometimes normally also, even if you're doing that, there will be struggles, you know, where children are generally very restless in nature. All you have to do is bring them back, just like we as adults. Don't we have so many struggles with our sadhana, you know? So, but we are adults, so we understand, okay, I have to bring myself. I know there's not enough taste, but I know it's good for me. You know, so, but children have a harder time with that. So we have to, you know, so they will slip, but then you bring them back. Don't become disheartened. Bring them back. And definitely, like in tomorrow's seminar, clarify, you know, Shastic education will help them to fix their minds, you know, to be able to be more convinced. Okay?
Thank you.
Should we stop here, Mataji, now? Prabhu and Mata.
Okay.
Yes?
Okay. Mataji, or something at this point. All right, Mataji. Once again, thank you. Thank you so much for such wonderful seminars and sharing such beautiful stuff with us.
Thank you
again to all the participants for participating so actively in today's seminar. Mataji, we are meeting with you tomorrow. But
yes.
Such a wonderful session.
Okay. I look forward to it. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.